Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse 1. Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the Do not judge, or you too will be judged. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged. And with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, "Let me take the speck out of your eye," when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite! First, take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. We'll end our reading there. Well, I think the reality is that in today's society, we're a judgment-oriented group. We evaluate people on many different fronts in many different ways. Some of you who have never seen me before today were probably making judgments about me based on what you saw. How my hair is, I have these glasses on, I have a suit coat tie. Does it match? I don't know, I hope so. You may have all kinds of things that you are looking at. And then once I started talking, you made more judgments about me. And we do this. We assess people on many different ways. Where do they live? What's their house like? Who are they married to? What are their children like? What kind of an income do they have? Are they successful? Are they smart? Are they athletic? What accomplishments have they made in life? Are they musical? Do they play an instrument? Do they wish they played an instrument? Do they sing well? Do you wish they didn't sing next to you? There's all kinds of ways that we make judgments about people. And we make judgments about sin as well in people. So who is it that normally falls under my eyes of judgment, under your eyes? Well, your own family, your spouse receives some of that. Your children receive some of that. Children, your parents receive some judgment from you. Other family members judge us. Then you spread it a little wider. Who do we judge? We judge other families. How often do you look at others and see how they're doing? See what's going on? The parents, how they're parenting? The children, are they obedient? And you make judgments. Here at church, do we not have opportunity to judge one another? Those who are homeschooling, how's it going? Especially this time of year, are we still doing it? Are you doing what you should? How are your kids coming out? Are you giving them the right tests? Are you giving them everything they need? We judge in this way. Teachers, fellow workers, the leaders in our church, the leaders in our government. You see, we are a judging people. We can hardly escape it. And so this passage speaks to this kind of an issue in our lives. And how does it begin? It says, "Do not judge, or you too will be judged." Now, what I want to say immediately is this does not mean that no one ever judges anyone else at all. That we exercise total tolerance. We give out all opportunities to do whatever you please. We will make no judgments. Our society at some level would tell you that's what you should do. Don't judge me. You don't have any place to judge me. I can do what I want. But the Bible argues for making judgments. Here in Matthew chapter 7, a little farther on, it talks about judging whether some are false teachers. You have to make a judgment about that. You can't say, well, let them teach what they want. Let the wolves in. It's okay. We don't mind. We're not even sure if they're wolves. We don't want to judge anybody after all. Matthew 18, confronting others with their offenses, their personal offenses, this road of discipline that we have in Matthew chapter 18. At some level, you have to make a judgment if someone has done something they shouldn't do. 1 Corinthians chapter 5, there is the judgment related to church discipline. Put out the man who is involved in sexual immorality. You have to make judgments. We cannot say that we don't ever judge. But know that we will be judged. You will be judged. Who judges you? Well, we are going to be judged by other people. You realize this? And you need to realize that if you're one of those who is a regular stone thrower, if you're throwing around a lot of criticism and judgment, you can expect to have some stones thrown back at you. Have you ever noticed that? You throw some, it starts a fight, and there's that discussion. And back and forth it goes. I think there's one man in the Bible that had this situation in his life, Ishmael. Listen to this verse from Genesis chapter 16, verse 12. It says, "He will be a wild donkey of a man. His hand will be against everyone, and everyone's hand against him. And he will live in hostility toward all his brothers." Do you think that's because he never judged anyone or no one judged him? No, there was differences. There was something going on. You have to realize that if you judge others unmercifully, that you can expect the same thing back. That's what this verse says. You will be judged. So other people will judge us. Who else judges us? God does. Romans chapter 14, verse 10. "You then, why do you judge your brother? Why do you look down on your brother? For we will all stand before God's judgment seat." God will indeed judge us. We have to know that. And it says later on, verse 12, "Each of us will give an account of himself to God." Do you realize you will make a judgment on yourself before God by giving an account? That's what Scripture tells us. So you will be judged by others, by God as well. So what is in view here in this idea of judging others? In this passage, what is it getting at? Well, I want to suggest that it's more than just looking at others and being critical, making funny names up for people for how they look. It's more than just mocking or teasing. It's more than just somebody looks a particular way and you don't like it and you judge them. That's not what is truly fully in view here. I think it's much deeper than that. Here we mean by judging is making a determination at some level that this person is doing wrong and then condemning them for doing wrong as if it was sin. That's the picture of what judging here is. I'm saying I'm the standard setter. I decide what is right and wrong, and then I will decide if you are meeting my standard. That's the sense of judging here. I'm the bearer of this standard. I am the keeper of the standards. I am the enforcer, and I will tell you what I think of you in relationship to that. And so then I have the opportunity, if I'm going to judge you, then I have this sense of enforcing a penalty on you for the infraction, for what you've done wrong that I've condemned. How do we judge people and then enforce penalties on them? Maybe you've done something like this. You ignore them. I judge you as insignificant to me in my life. You're not what I want, so I'm going to ignore you. Have you ever ignored somebody because you made a judgment about them, against them? You alienate them. You set them apart. Not only do you ignore them, you encourage other people. Oh, you don't want to be with Susie. Do you know what she's like? Do you know what she did? Don't hang out with her. That's the sense of judging and punishing. It goes on. We can do this with that critical talk, when we slander, when we gossip about them, when we actively tease them in front of others or ourselves, and we tease and torment them, and it can even lead to harassment and physical harm because we have judged someone not to be of equal status or what we want them to be. If you think in the States and you think back many years ago when there was a lot of issues between whites and blacks, there was a lot of judgment going on in that time. And there was all this kind of activity. So that's the view we have. We are the enforcer. And we want to, if we're not going to do this gossip thing, then we're going to make a change in that person. You will not be allowed to stay who you are because I judge you to not be worthy as you are. So I will seek to change you. I will try to change what you are. That's a picture of judging. So how does it come about that we do this? How does judgment come in this way? It says here, if I judge, I will be judged in the same measure, in the same way. What does that mean for us? How do you judge others? How does it actually happen? Well, one of the ways is that we jump to conclusions. We make hasty judgments about people. You see something that's happened and you make a decision that, well, that means this. And we can't do that. We make decisions based on a limited understanding or knowledge of a situation. Sometimes we actually ignore the facts that are right before us and decide without knowing all that we need to know. Consider this particular passage in Acts chapter 11. This is after Peter has been to Cornelius. And here in Acts 11, verse 1, it says, "The apostles and the brothers throughout Judea heard that the Gentiles also had received the word of God. So when Peter went up to Jerusalem, the circumcised believers criticized him and said, 'You went into the house of uncircumcised men and ate with them. How could you do that?'" Do you hear the judgment? "Because they knew you were not to eat with uncircumcised men." And so they quickly went to judgment on Peter. And what does the next verse say? "Peter began and explained everything to them precisely as it had happened." Because this wasn't just Peter's thing. The Holy Spirit was involved. God was involved in all that went before. But these who were in Judea, and notice, this is the circumcised believers, the Jews, said, "You can't do that." And they judged him, but they didn't have all the information. Well, how else do we judge others? Well, we judge others sometimes on one act, one thing that they've done in their life, one time in one instance, and we condemn them and give them a bad name, a bad reputation forever for one action. And we judge others that way. Sometimes we decide ahead of time based on our own opinion or our past experience with a particular person because we know what they're like. Right? I know what he is like. I know what she's like. So I already know what my opinion and what my judgment is going to be. And we don't give them a chance. We assume the person is guilty, condemnable, worthy of our judgment, because they used to be. Do you see the picture we have here? How else do we judge others? We make judgments outside of Scripture, on traditions of men or on our personal preference. We make judgments from a jealous heart, from an envious heart. We take things the wrong way, the way somebody didn't even mean to say it, but we have a heart that's ready to think evil of that person, and so we hear them say something, and we take it as against us, and we judge them for it. But if you went and asked them and said, "Well, is this what you meant?" "Well, no, you misunderstood me." And yet we judge others in this way. We sometimes consider these people unbelievers, backsliders, lacking true faith, hypocrites, pharisaical, and we judge them. So notice what it says here. If you judge, you will be judged in the same way, with the same measure. How do you judge people? Are you harsher than you need to be? Do you ever drive a personal past experience with a particular person and say, you have done this to me before, I will not let it happen again, and so you are harsher than you need be for that situation? Your judgment may not even be appropriate. You may have misconstrued. You don't understand what has happened. You don't believe that's there. And so you judge anyways. Sometimes when you watch people and look at people, you take out your magnifying glass. You start looking at their life and you look at it through that magnifying glass because you want to see something that you can judge. And sometimes it takes a magnifying glass to find it. But you will, because that's what you desire to do. And that's the picture we have of how we might judge others. Do you find yourself looking for what's wrong? Parents, it's so easy to find what's wrong with our children. Sometimes we don't need the magnifying glass, do we? We don't need to take that fine-tooth comb to pick through and find things. It's there. How do you judge your children? Because you have to realize that how you're judged, how you judge others, is how you will be judged. And what would become of us if we took the way that we judge others and we said, God, treat me, judge me the way I judge those people around me? How many of us can with a true, clear conscience and desire say, I want to be judged by God the way I judge others? Not many of us can say that. So, what's an approach? How do we deal with this kind of issue of judgment in our lives? Well, we have an illustration here in our passage. Something about wood. Notice this. What gets in your eye? Two things. Planks and specks, or sawdust specks. You know, I'm not a wood shop kind of guy, but I do remember back in my high school days, had that time in the wood shop. So I have a little bit of understanding of this, and of course they always want you to wear those goggles, which look really bad. That's a judgment. But you had to wear those goggles, and it's like, come on. And of course, what tends to happen is when the teacher's not looking or the teacher's not there, those goggles go flying. Because I don't need those goggles. I can do it without that. And so there you are working away, and you get these things in your eyes. What is it that you get in your eyes? Specks of sawdust. I have to admit that I personally, in the wood shop, have never had a plank in my eye. In the wood shop, right? A plank is a huge, great big, long piece of wood. You know, about this wide and about as long as from Mel, maybe not that far, but from me to the speaker is a plank. It's a huge piece of lumber. So we have to see that Matthew here is giving us an hyperbole, an exaggeration of things to make his point, because no one can actually have a plank in their eye. You wouldn't be able to do it. But what happens when you have these things with this? Well, a speck is an irritant. It bugs you. It might make your eye water a little bit. But you can probably still see, and if you're in the wood shop, you might still work. You might still work. You know, that thing's in your eye, and you're trying to get it out, and it's an irritation. But you can still live with that there. Now, the plank. If I have this plank in my eye, and one, of course, it's heavy. My eyeball gets very tired trying to move this plank around. And it's gonna, so if I have this plank, look, I can't see over here because I have this plank right in my eye. It blocks my vision. That's the idea of this thing. So here I am. I can only see partially when I have this big plank sticking out of my eye. So what are we getting at here with these planks and these specks? Well, think of it again like the gnat in the camel. You strained out the gnats and you swallow camels. It's that same kind of exaggeration. So we're referring to the faults, the flaws in our character, the sins in our life for which we judge others. That's the picture here. The specks, these little sawdust, these irritants are that. They're mainly insignificant things in a person's life. Minor consequence. Love is to cover a multitude of sins. Love should cover sawdust in our lives. It's not anything important. Now, the plank, on the other hand, the plank is a major sin. It's a major deficiency in my life in how I think or behave and what I'm doing. Because you can see, if I truly had a plank, I can't see certain things. I can't see certain things about you or me. And so what do we learn from here? Well, if we're plank-eyed people, we make all kinds of allowances for me. Well, I've got a plank in my eye. What can you expect me? I can't see everything that I need to see. And so if I'm a plank-eyed person, then I am going to be much more willing to let me do certain things. Because I have a plank in my eye. But I cannot imagine how those speck-eyed people can continue to live their lives with those specks in their eyes. That's unacceptable. What kind of a person are you? Are you a plank-eyed person? Do you get this way where you'll allow certain things in your situation? You'll walk around with certain issues in your life and sins, but boy, you're so quick to find those little specks in someone else. We're not fit to judge others when we're like this, and they have this little tiny thing here in their eye. That's what this is telling us. If you're guilty of some of these things that you're telling others about, if you have certain sins in your life and you're working on pointing them out in everyone else's life, then there's a problem. And that's what it tells us in Matthew 7, verse 4. It asks the question that all of us would ask of the guy with the plank in his eye versus the guy with the little speck in his eye. It says, how can you say to your brother, let me take that speck out of your eye when all the time there's a plank in your own eye? Now, think about this. If I have a plank in my eye and I'm trying to get the speck out of his eye, you see how hard it could be? No, my plank's even longer. How can I do that? It's just crazy to think that if I have this plank, that I can deal with the speck. So what do you do about it? What do you do about this situation when you have a plank in your eye, they have a speck? It says here, it tells us, take care of the plank in your own eye first. You will be no help to anyone else if you have a plank in your own eye. Take care of your own heart issues, the sins in your life. Make your own heart your first focus. So often, plank-eyed people are looking at everybody else and trying to look at them and judge and see, boy, if they would only do this, if they would only stop doing that, boy, if they could just get their life in order. And you practically are whacking them with the plank in your eye because of what's there, and you don't see it. So you have to deal with your own heart. Psalm 139, verse 23 says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Test me and know my anxious thoughts. See if there is any offensive way in me. You want to deal with the planks and specks? It begins there. It begins with God, that you may find out what's in your own heart. And many times, the very sin we see so easily that's speck-sized in someone else's life is plank-sized in our own. And we don't see it. Perhaps the fault of which I complain is deep down inside me. And part of the reason I see it so well in you is because I really am so familiar with it in myself. And yet I'm not willing to deal with it. So what do we do with this? We have all kinds of things here. This indignation that I have over your speck, when I have this plank in my eye, is hypocrisy. It's being a hypocrite. It's being a fake. It's being a pretender. That's what this says. You cannot do that. It will be of no value. How can I reform another of something that I hold on to? Parents, how many times do we tell our children something they should do, something they shouldn't do, that we're still engaged in? Do you want to make it believable for your children? If you tell them this is not good for you, then it better not be good for you as the parent. If you're telling your children you need to do more of whatever, but you're not going to be believable. You need to be truthful in this. Don't be a hypocrite. That's the picture we have here. Now, does this mean that I never point out specks in people's eyes? That I never reprove another? That I never correct? Because, you know, the reality is I have at least two planks. I only have two arms, so I can only show you. I might have two planks, 10 planks, 20 planks in my eyes. I am blind based on the sin in my life. So how can I ever correct anyone else? How could I ever do this? My offense, my planks, can never be used as a defense for excusing timely, appropriate correction, admonishment, and discipline. I have heard sometimes where parents will say, you know, when I was little, I used to do this very thing. How can I punish my child for what I used to do as a child? It's not right. It's not fair. I just can't do it. God says, you are to do this. Even if you have the plank or you had the plank, you are still called by God to deal with sin in people's lives. You cannot let it go. But on the other hand, remember what you need to do first. If you still have planks in your eyes, remove the plank from your own eye. Remove that sin in your own life. That's what the author is telling us to do. And then when you do that, now you're in a place to help that other brother with the speck. Then I can help him. Galatians chapter 6, verse 1. Brothers, if someone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual should restore him gently. When you have done what's necessary in your own heart, you're in a place to bring others back to Christ. And you'll know what it's like because you've dealt with planks. When you deal with the planks in your life, you'll know the grace of God and you'll know how to be gracious and bring God's grace to others. If you've never dealt with the planks in your own life, you're not successfully going to deal with the specks in others' lives. Ephesians 4, verse 15, instead speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into Him who is the head, that is Christ. In Colossians 1:28, we proclaim Him, admonishing and teaching everyone with all wisdom, so that we may present everyone perfect in Christ. This is the description of what I am like when I have dealt with the planks in my life and I'm ready to deal with other specks. And it comes with grace and compassion and humility. Now, briefly on verse 6, because it's part of this section to some degree. Some are not worthy of judgment. Verse 6, do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces. Now, some of you are dog lovers. We won't ask you to raise your hands. I don't know how many of you are swine lovers. We for sure won't ask you to raise your hands. But dogs and swine can be unpredictable. You don't always know what they're going to do. One minute, seemingly friendly. The next minute, there could be an attack. Dogs and swine can do this. Now, they could have included cats. I don't know why they didn't. Maybe they were not even on the list of acceptable animals to mention, but cats can do this too. I know, I have one. And that's the picture we have here. These animals, one minute this way, the next minute that, they can be evil. They can tear you and bite you. They have no concern for others. They take what is precious, as it says here, and they trample it into the dirt. They don't have any sense of what is precious, what is to be treasured. And there are human dogs and swine in this world. They have contempt for the things of God and the graces of God. They are dangerous in how they respond and react. And they will turn on you and your reproof. They won't hear you. You may try to be dealing with specs because you have gone through the process, and they won't hear you. And it says here, be careful. Don't do this. They will hurt your reputation. They will try to hurt and destroy you, you or your family. It's not worth putting your pearls, the graces of God, before them. It's not what he calls us to do. You may lovingly reprove them. You may do it in exactly the right way, and they respond with hate and attack against you. How do you deal with them? What do you do? Well, there was a king in the land of Judah named Amaziah, and he was looking to go to war against some of those around him and his enemies. And he was in Judah, and he decided to get some help from Israel. So he called troops from Israel to help him. Well, a man of God comes to him and says, you cannot use those troops from Israel. It will not go well with you if you do that. And King Amaziah hears him, and I think somewhat reluctantly says, rats. It was going to really be a help, but if the man of God says no, all right, they won't come with us. And so away he sends them. And then we find in this passage that he has great success against the Amorites, and he's able to defeat them, and he actually captures them and gets their idols, the gods of the people of Seir, the Edomites, and he brings them back, and he starts worshiping these idols. And here's what it says in verse 20, 2 Chronicles chapter 25, verse 16. The man of God has come to him and said, you must not do this. And it says, while he was still speaking, this man of God, the king said to him, have we appointed you an advisor to the king? Stop! Why be struck down? That's what the king says to the man of God who is warning them. You shouldn't be worshiping these idols. And he says, we don't want your word here. And here's what the prophet stopped. He stopped speaking to him. And he says this, I know that God has determined to destroy you because you have done this and have not listened to my counsel. That's a strong statement, but that's how God, in this situation, dealt with the swine who would not treasure the things of God. He stopped speaking. He stopped giving his counsel, and he gave him God's judgment, and he's gone. So we need to beware when we are giving counsel to others, when we are giving instruction to that sinful, deceived, hardened heart. To these it will not do any good, and it will be throwing our pearls before swine. Jeremiah chapter 6, verse 10. To whom can I speak and give warning? Who will listen to me? Their ears are closed, so they cannot hear. The word of the Lord is offensive to them. They find no pleasure in it. That's the dogs and the swine. That's who they are. But who is the person who listens to what you have to say? Proverbs 25:12. Like an earring of gold or an ornament of fine gold is a wise man's rebuke to a listening ear. That's the one you can speak to. That's the result. The psalmist says in 141:5, let a righteous man strike me. It is a kindness. Let him rebuke me. It is oil on my head, and my head will not refuse it. So, what am I to do? What do I have as options? Luke chapter 6. Do not judge, and you will not be judged. Do not condemn, and you will not be condemned. Forgive, and you will be forgiven. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Therefore, encourage one another and build each other up. Is this not what God would rather us do than be judging and tearing and destroying people? Philippians 2, verse 3, do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit, but in humility consider others better than yourself. Each of you should look not only to your own interests. That's what judging is about. What I want, what makes me happy, and you're not it. And I don't want to live with you if you're that way. But you're to look out for the other's interests. Clothe yourselves with humility. God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. So do you judge others? Why do you do it? What is your intent? How is your heart? Are you dealing with the planks in your own eyes? God says, remove the planks so that you can be a help to those with specs. May this be true of all of us as we rightly judge others.